mutagen that was injected into our blood began to change us in miraculous ways. I saw how your father loved you, and I knew I had to show that same love to the turtles. I became their father, and they became my sons.
Welcome to the Turtles Dojo, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Chris. Chris, how's it going?
I'm doing really well, Adam. How's things going with you today?
Holding up pretty well, actually, all things considered. And continuing to wait for the world to go back to normal or get back to somewhat of a normal as the days go by, but all things considered, doing pretty well. But we're going to talk about some fun stuff to distract us from what's going on outside of our respective windows, and that is talking the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, specifically the first two episodes of the 1986 animated series. Before we do that, Chris is obviously a new voice to our listeners. Typically, we will go over his origins with the TMNT, but because there was a recording issue, we had done an episode on these two episodes prior, and I had editing issues that screwed up the recording, so Chris came on the following episode and we did his origin there, so you will hear his origin the next episode you hear, because that's when we recorded it. But that's why you're not hearing it here, in case you're wondering who's this new guy and what the hell does he know about the TMNT. You'll find all that out next episode. We do have a bit of news. What's that?
To get everybody to come back. Be honest.
You're cutting out a bit, Chris. Is there something going on with your microphone?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Can you not hear me?
It's better now. Okay. There was just a little bit of a cutout there. It must have been just a little glitch. But you were saying before we got interrupted, what were you saying?
That's just a tease to get everyone to come back for the next episode so they can hear my bona fides.
That's right. That's why not? We might as well. But we got to keep them coming back for something. So there it is. There is some brief bit of news, and that is there is a 5-part miniseries coming out. It's going to be written by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, the original creators of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and they're going to be joined by Tom Waltz, who was the writer of the current IDW series, and they're doing a story called The Last Ronin. And that story, the way it was previewed in, I want to say, Entertainment Weekly not too long ago. And essentially, it's basically The Dark Knight Returns meets Mad Max of the Ninja Turtles franchise. And it's going to tell the story of a possible future of the TMNT. This was a story they came up with when they originally wrote the original Mirage Studios Turtles, but they never got around to it. So when they wrote it, you know, the story was set in, so they wrote it in the 80s, and the story, the future that they were telling the story in was 2016, 17. So they've had to go in and update the future 20 years removed from, you know, this year, which is, which would be 2040. But otherwise, the crux and the general, you know, the main points of their original tale remain. So Chris, when I say that we're getting a story that is essentially the Dark Knight Returns and Mad Max meets the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, what's your reaction to that?
I mean, that's quite the triumvirate there. If you're going to combine three classic properties, I mean, does it really get much better than that? I'm stoked.
Yeah, and I'm glad comic shops are back to opening, because I need to put this on my pull list and I need to be reading it as soon as possible. So, you know, like, I'm all for just fast forwarding through the rest of 2020. So if I could fast forward and get that book earlier and then fast forward all the way to 2021, I'd be all right with that. I wouldn't complain, because 2020 has not been, you know, anything to write home about. So, but yeah, no, that's something to look forward to. And from what I understand, it's a 5-part miniseries, and they are prestige format books, so they're a little bit longer and a little bit meatier. That is, and the release date for that is August 29th of 2020. So be on the lookout for that, and hopefully, once the, I mean, we'll see how we'll handle it, but we'll either review it, you know, monthly or when the whole series is complete. But we will cover it at some point on this show, and it sounds like we're both looking forward to it. So there it is. There's the latest in terms of the comic books. In terms of the current Ninja Turtles comic, I don't know when they are resuming shipping of that. Information hasn't been released on that front from IDW, but I will, you know, as soon as we have information, we will find a way to get that out to you. So if you're reading the current IDW Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles book, which I am, I will try and keep you informed either, you know, well, it won't be our next episode because that was pre-recorded, but in one of our upcoming episodes, if the issue doesn't release on before that, or I will make a post on my social media outlets informing everybody that the issue is out, and hopefully whoever's getting it can make arrangements to get it, because I know comic scheduling is trying to play catch up, so who knows when, you know, things are getting shuffled around to sort of, you know, get back on some sort of normal schedule. So I will do my best to keep everybody updated in whatever way, shape, or form that I can. With that bit of news taken care of, we are going to get to the main topic for tonight's episode, and that is the 2-part episode premiere of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1986 animated series, Enter the Shredder, parts 1 and 2. Chris, we get a lot of info in this 2-parter. We get the origin of the turtles told via flashbacks. We get their, obviously their first encounter with April. Their first battle with the Foot Clan, and as well as the introductions to Shredder, the Technodrome, We've got, let's see, Bebop and Rocksteady and Crank.
So yeah, man, they fit a lot into these two episodes.
Yeah, it was 40 minutes, but they sure as heck, you know, packed it with all the goodies. So give me some of your thoughts. What did you think of... I'll start with, okay, so in like what I noticed, and let me know if you're on board here, in terms of, you know, saving April from, in this case, it was muggers, and, you know, they rescue her, and she, throughout the whole ordeal, you know, is rendered unconscious, and then, you know, they bring her back to consciousness, and that's when she gets a full look of the turtles and Splinter, and then Splinter narrates their origin tale. But before we get into the specifics, the nuts and bolts of this interpretation of the origin, I found that the first encounter of April meeting the turtles was very similar to the original Mirage comics, but also I think it would be the basis of you know, also it was later borrowed from by the animated, or sorry, the 1990 movie. So what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree on both of those points. I think April is really the first main character that you meet in the episode, mm-hmm. and they use her as a device to both introduce us to the turtles and to explain their history, as Splinter is telling her the story of how they came to be. So I like the use of April as a plot device there. Mm-hmm. I also like the way that the turtles ended up meeting her, because she stumbles into their sewer as she's trying to escape the muggers. And as the turtles come out of the shadows to rescue her, they end up fighting Bebop and Rocksteady in their human form before mm-hmm. they get transformed in the next episode. So I thought it was a nice way to use her as our introduction both to the turtles and to... show us their history through the flashbacks narrated by Splinter.
Yeah, and I liked in when the fight makes its way to the sewer, I liked that the turtles were in the shadow.
Yep.
And you didn't see them. I mean, that has been a consistent element throughout pretty much at least the ones that I've seen, every incarnation of the turtles. Is that when they first save April, it's all done in the shadows, and they really embrace the ninja aspect of, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, you don't see the turtles in their full form and color until April does. So you're basically, April is the viewer in this sense. You discover the turtles along with her when she sees them for the first time.
And it's funny because if you are a kid and you happen upon that without seeing, let's say, advertisements or you know, commercials for this, you'd be thinking, what are those? You know, what are those things? I mean, imagine, no, it's kind of hard because they do the intro sequence, so they kind of tell you. But if you were seeing, if that was your first entry point into the series, into the product, you'd be like, wow, I wonder what those things are. And then. So, I mean, there is an opportunity, if the stars align and you've never seen the turtles beforehand, to really experience this from April's point of view.
Yeah, you learn everything as she does after, you know, she passes out and they take her back to the sewer. She awakens and sees them eating pizza. So that's also that they use her to kind of give you a window into their lives, and you discover their love for pizza right along with April.
Yeah, and you know what I liked about the fact that when she first sees them, when they ask her, you know, what her deal is, basically they want to know, you know, how she got herself into that predicament. She starts telling the story, but then, you know, it kind of clicks to her that, wait a minute, I'm talking to four humanoid looking sort of talking turtles and a rat, a giant, well, not giant, but you know, a humanoid rat. And she kind of calls out how weird that is. And I'm glad she did, because in some cartoons that you see, animation, it's just, oh yeah, that's normal. Let's just roll with it, you know. But I'm glad they didn't treat it like, hey, this is a normal thing, and I'm just talking to four Teenage Ninja Turtles.
No, you can tell that April is shocked by what she's seeing and experiencing. And you're right. It is. It's nice that they chose to play it that way instead of her just being like, oh, this is what happens on a Tuesday in New York City.
Yeah. So I really like that. In terms of the origin, now, a couple of things to note here. So in this iteration, Hamato Yoshi becomes Splinter. Like he, you know, they pretty much have the part about him, you know, starting out in Japan and he's part of the Foot Clan, but then he's disgraced because he doesn't bow to the Master Sensei, and or Okazaki sets it up so he can't bow to the Master Sensei, and it looks like he's trying to plot to kill him, so he gets exiled and he, you know, goes to New York City, basically has to slum it in the sewers with you know. And then, you know, we get the whole scene where the kid is walking with the turtle jar, but instead of a truck sort of almost running into him and killing him, he just trips and falls, and then, you know, the turtles fall in the sewer. I mean, so that's different from the original comic, and also I think the movie as well, which had, you know, the truck veering out of control, and then, you know, the sewage ooze, or the, you know, kind of and all that, you know, splashing and the canister breaking and all that. I think they did it like this in the cartoon to make it less traumatizing, because a kid almost getting run over and then blinded by friggin' ooze is a little traumatizing to younger. It could be traumatizing.
I would agree. Children.
And also, you know, I think most comic book fans will understand that this origin or the sequence of events where, you know, the truck almost hits the kid and he's blinded by the mutagen, that is very similar to Daredevil. And Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird will tell you that they got their inspiration from Daredevil sequence of events. So I wonder if the cartoon had to change it up, not only because it would have been slightly traumatizing, but also for potential legality kind of concerns.
Yeah, I agree. That's a little too dark for the tone and nature of this cartoon in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is definitely a kid's show. So there's no reason to focus on those kind of aspects of it when you could just as easily have the kid trip and drop the turtles down the drain.
Yeah, because the end result is the same. But yeah, it's cool. Like, I like the, in the sense that there are similarities, like in the comic and movie version, there are similarities to the Daredevil origin. I think it's cool because I'm a fan on the Marvel side of the equation. I'm a fan of Daredevil. So to me, that's cool. And it's kind of a shame that there's never been a crossover between Daredevil, a comics crossover between Daredevil and the Turtles, maybe probably for that exact reason, because it's a little on the nose, because, you know, like, Splinter is essentially Stick, and the Foot are essentially the Hand.
Yeah.
So
the hand and the foot. I mean, yeah, could I mean, it be any more got, on the nose?
I mean, if we cover any more body parts, this would be an anatomy class. So I think we'll just leave it there. The other thing about the origin that I find interesting is the fact that in this case, Hamato Yoshi is Splinter, whereas in the original Mirage comic and in the movie, he is the Splinter is just or was just the pet rat of Hamato Yoshi. So what do you think of that difference? Do you have a preference? Do you?
I actually prefer it in the way that it's presented in the cartoon, because if he was just the pet rat of Hamato Yoshi, how would he know ninjutsu? It kind of makes more sense that Hamato Yoshi is the one who is transformed into Splinter, because he has been trained in the art of ninjutsu. And it also sets up the rivalry between Splinter and Shredder, otherwise known as Oroku Saki, because they were enemies in Japan. So I think the cartoon does it very well.
Yeah. I mean, I get that in the movie and in the original comic, they show Splinter in pre-mutated form, mimicking the moves of you know, his master Yoshi, but as a martial artist myself, who's been doing karate for since 1994, so it's 26 years? My math is correct.
Wow.
I find it a little bit insulting that somebody thinks that you could just, like a rat, could just learn martial arts by mimicking, you know. Or I think it was even more egregious in the reboot movie, where he learned basically from a picture book and then taught the turtles from a picture book. You know, that was kind of ridiculous. But so yeah, you're right. To me, it works better in the animated series as well. And also, you know, the IDW comics put a wrinkle on that and introduce somewhat of a reincarnation aspect as well, which adds to the intrigue. But I won't spoil that, because eventually you're going to read some of those issues, so we won't spoil those just yet. But I'll give you a little tease. So yeah, I like that this aspect of the origin a little better, like you, in that respect. So you know, really, what we see is in this first part is the turtles tracking down, you know, April's attackers, and because there's been a string of robberies from a ninja clan, which is in keeping with what we saw in the movie as well. So they, you know, they did take that, and so, you know, April and the turtles go on a little bit of a hunt for the ninja thieves. And that's where we get in the cartoon where she has to disguise the turtles, because they're going out in New York City streets. And so, you know, they that's where they get the fedoras and their coats from.
And nobody thinks it's odd that there are two-toed long green legs sticking out the bottom of the trench coats.
Yeah, I mean, nobody bats an eye, which is, I mean, there must be, I've never been to New York, so, I mean, there must be some really strange shit going on in New York that if people think that that's normal. I don't know, who knows. But yeah, that was a little weird, but it was cool, because I remember, you know, seeing Raphael in that trench coat and that fedora in the movie was a really striking image to me as a kid. So, you know, seeing the cartoon, all four of them in that outfit and get up was kind of cool. And also, I love the fact that April gets them confused at the beginning.
Yeah, don't they have to correct her? Like, doesn't she call them all by a different name and they correct her four different times?
Yeah. I kind of find that funny. But also, I mean, it's cool because she didn't have their names. Like, she didn't color coordinate between, like we did as kids. Where, you know, where, okay, the blue one's Leonardo, the red bandana is Raphael, the purple, and so on and so forth. She hadn't had enough time to put that together yet. And that makes sense because she's still in the midst of a traumatic situation. She's had two traumas to deal with. One, that she was almost robbed and almost, you know, assaulted. And two, that she's now encountered these four Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So it's understandable that she didn't put that correlation together just yet.
Well, and it being the first episode, that also helps the new viewer learn who everyone is, because she's getting them wrong and then being corrected. So, you know, that's helping us get to know them a little bit better.
So they do, you know, the main battle sequence sort of in the episodes, they find the headquarters of the Foot. And of course, it's in a part of town where everything is labeled ninja this, ninja that, you know.
Ninja just, dry cleaners, ninja pizza.
It's like, gee, this isn't specific. And they call it how suspicious it is, and they kind of, you know, they're kind of saying, yeah, we know this is a little bit on the nose, but just go with it. So I like that they kind of call it. I think it's Michelangelo that calls it out, but in a funny way. So that was kind of fun to watch. But so they do get their they do have their first encounter with the Foot Clan, and.
And this being an 80s cartoon, they had to make the Foot Clan into robots so that the Turtles could destroy them in all awesome sorts of different ways, which they couldn't do that if they were humans. You can't have Leonardo slicing a human with his katana, of course.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that, so I'm glad you did. Yeah, clearly they were keeping an eye on, you know, censorship and parents groups and what have you. So, you know, the Foot Clan become robots, as you said. And then it's funny that the building that they're tracking the foot in is overflowing, you know, basically is destroyed because it had a water, you know, excessive water damage. Can we call that excessive water damage? I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think that's an apt description.
And then, you know, there's the discovery of the Technodrome, which is kind of... So then they go back to Splinter, and they present him with the uniform. And that's when he realizes that this is the uniform of the Foot Clan. And he realizes, he puts two and two together and realizes, okay, that must mean that Orokosaki is, you know, not far behind. And I like the way we got Shredder in this. It's very much like, we didn't really get a good look at him either in the first part. I think we saw his hands and the
right.
and the weaponry on his gauntlets. And we heard his voice, of course.
It's kind of like the like Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget.
I was just gonna say that it's very, yeah, it's very much Dr. Claw. All that was missing was the petting of the cat, which, you know, I guess maybe that's where Mike Myers got the Dr. Evil thing from, the petting of the cat thing. But yeah, so it was. I like that there it mirrored. The first appearance of the Turtles, which was in Shadows. So I like that. And the episode ends, you know, kind of like with a little cliffhanger because, yeah, technically the Turtles defeat their adversary, but the larger adversary, or who we think is the larger adversary, is still at large. So there's a bit of a cliffhanger element there too. So Were you content with Shredder's kind of reveal and the fight scene, the first fight scenes between the Foot and the Turtles?
Yeah, I mean, I think for an introductory episode, it does a pretty good job of setting everyone up and letting you know what the long term, I guess beef is between Shredder and Splinter, and it places all the characters in the right place to begin telling the story.
Right. All right. So what would you rate this first part of the episode?
You know, I think I give this one a 9 out of 10. We get to meet all the main players except for Krang. We do meet him in the second part. But we meet the Turtles, April, Splinter, Shredder. We get the backstory of the Turtles. The only real action is the Turtles taking on the Foot Clan, which are obviously robots, so we don't get any real Shredder action in this one. So I'd say, all things considered, I think a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, that's fair. 9 out of 10, only because the only reason it doesn't get the extra point is because I think it would have been cool to see more of a direct Shredder versus the Turtles and Splinter standoff. And I kind of want to see, I wanted to see that on the roof, like right. It was in the original comic and the original movie. We didn't get that, so I was kind of bummed. But other than that, it was a 9 out of 10. And again, you know, the young version of me when this first came out didn't know the original comic and didn't know there was that original fight on the roof. So I younger me wouldn't have taken a point off for that, but older me can, because now I know. And I think G.I. Joe used to say, knowing is half the battle, right? So I'm just going to go with that. I think that was G.I. Joe. I could be wrong.
Oh, it sure was.
Okay, so I'm not getting my 80s cartoons mixed up. That's good.
Speaking of other 80s cartoons, the supervising producer on these episodes is a man by the name of Fred Wolf. And when I did a little diving and some research, he actually was a producer of some of my favorite cartoons from the 80s, including DuckTales, Alvin and the Chipmunks, and James Bond Jr., which is technically a 90s cartoon and not the 80s. But he had his hand in a lot of things that I really enjoyed growing up. So big ups to Fred Wolf. He was out there doing some good work in the animation world.
You know, I'm aware of all of those, and I enjoyed all of them, except I don't remember James Bond Jr.
So James Bond Jr., I don't know why his name was Jr. I think he was actually James Bond's nephew, but it was a spy show, a spy cartoon series that just basically had a younger version of James Bond. He was like a teenager, so it was someone that kids could relate to more than, you know, your adult James Bond in his 30s or 40s. So, you know, while you're playing around on YouTube one day, check out James Bond Jr. It was pretty great.
I'm going to, because I like James Bond. I'm a fan of the character. So I will certainly check that out for sure. But that's enough about James Bond or James Bond Jr. for now. Maybe that's a side podcast one day. We'll do a special episode. But for now, let's talk episode 2 of or part 2 of Enter the Shredder. So here we're really introduced to we get more background on Shredder and we realize that he's not the guy 100%. You know, he's a big bad, but he's not the big, big bad, if that makes sense.
Right. There's a brain behind the operation.
Literally.
Literally.
From Dimension X, Krang. I got to say, and I mean this in a good way, it's one of the ugliest villains I've ever seen.
Oh, and he's so perfect for 80s animation. I mean, he's ugly. Yesterday when we were watching the episodes, my son said something about Krang, and I began like mimicking Krang, talking in his voice, and my son was trying to do it, and it was hilarious. I wish I had recorded him. But everything everything about his look, his voice, his background, his motivations, yeah, man, he's one of the all-time great villains in animation.
I think creepy is the best word for him. I mean, just... Sure. And it's funny how much, he bosses Shredder around quite a bit.
Oh, Shredder is his bitch. Don't get it mistaken.
Yeah. That's definitely true. Maybe I forgot that little tidbit, because it's been a while, but that was a little shocking because I always thought of Shredder as this, the total badass, the badass among badasses in villainry, one of the top tier. But he's right away, he's Mr., a subservient, right? He's, and without, it's very much Krang's show, because without Krang's technology, how much would Shredder, have? Like, how much of his empire would he have? But we also get to see a little bit of the turtles' routine, which is apparently before they have breakfast, they train.
Yep.
I don't know if I could do it. Me personally, I couldn't do that on an empty stomach, but yay for them that they're capable of doing that.
I thought the exact same thing, but Leonardo is adamant when they wake up, the other guys are ready for breakfast, and Leonardo says, not before we train.
Yeah, so, good for them. I need to eat beforehand, so that's just me. I mean, not right beforehand, but, half an hour to an hour beforehand, I need some sustenance. But hey, I guess they're better than me. We see that Michelangelo is the more impulsive one in terms of training. And I guess maybe because I always thought, I always think of Mikey as the youngest of the bunch. Is it ever stated that he's the youngest? Has it ever been outright stated?
I don't know that it has, and I've always just kind of assumed that they were all like quadruplets, I guess. Same age.
Yeah, fair enough.
He's definitely the most immature. I would give him that.
Right, yeah, absolutely. It's a miracle that that April's able to go to work and still have a job, because apparently she's been missing several days.
Right. She's been chilling in the sewer.
Nowadays you'd probably get fired for behavior like that. But therein lies April, still with her job. And she gets, she's very still tied to the turtles. She still goes on their adventure with them. Although this time they tell her, okay, it's a little unsafe to come tracking down the where the Technodrome is and all that. So they keep her topside. The turtles kind of get wind of where the Technodrome is because Shredder has had a rhinoceros and what is it, a warthog? What is he?
It is a warthog, yes, sir.
A warthog, yeah. Stolen from the zoo. And
you know what I noticed? Yeah. That little one-wheeled robot that that absconds with the rhino and the warthog really reminded me of Gizmo Duck from the DuckTales show.
That is a good point. Yeah.
And when I saw that it was the same producer on both series, I was like, I wonder if he like introduced that idea into DuckTales. If he was like, well, I remember this robot character that we use in Ninja Turtles. Let's slap a duck in that costume and give him a cool visor and call him Gizmo Duck.
I can imagine that. I can imagine so. Yeah, because the look is very quite similar. So Shredder has these two animals taken from the zoo for the purposes of, you know, experimenting on them with mutagen to change them and to use them as his mutant soldiers. So that's what puts the turtles onto the scent of where the Technodrome is, because not being very subtle, there's a big hole in the ground
yeah.
of the zoo. So the turtles board the Technodrome and they realize that Splinter has been taken by Shredder. And Shredder puts them through a test by having them fight several of those gizmo-looking robots, of which they, you know, take care of pretty quickly. And then, you know, Shredder makes an offer of, you know, join the foot. And you have to join because I made you. And basically, this part of the story kind of connects Shredder to the turtles in the sense that he was having them watched, or he was watching them and tracking them, especially more so Hamato Yoshi than the actual four turtles. But and he was the one who had them engineered, you know, sort of the scenario so that they could be doused with the mutagen.
You know, when Shredder is watching the turtles on those screens in the Technodrome, I keep asking myself, what camera is he using to watch these guys? Like, they appear on the screen, but there's no camera around. How does he see them?
That's a good question.
But, you know, as a six-year-old in 1987, these aren't the questions that I'm asking. This is a 39-year-old watching the cartoon asking these questions now.
Absolutely. Yeah, these questions don't come into your mind when you're a kid. But that is, as an adult, that is a very good observation. There was no camera anywhere on those, you know, in the vicinity of those sewers. So, but nonetheless, you know, the idea that Shredder orchestrated all that, or was part of the cause of it, is really cool. And you're very unique to the mythology, because I don't think that has ever been done.
Yeah, because prior, you know, in the first episode, we learn of his connection to Splinter, so now this ties him to the turtles as well.
Yes.
And when I watched it with my daughter, with my son and my daughter just thought that those little turtles were the cutest thing she had ever seen. And I'm not going to disagree. They're pretty cute.
No, she started asking you to buy her turtles as a pet. Or does she already have turtles?
I don't know. Yeah, I think we're going to skip things that live in an aquarium. We prefer furry animals in this house.
Fair enough. So after, you know, like I said, they dispatch the robots pretty quick. Again, they have to face Bebop and Rocksteady. They defeat them, and then, you know, they manage to save Splinter and they win the day. But you know, of course, they think they've seen the last of Shredder, and they've defeated him. But that's not the case, as we know. And then the next objective for Shredder, as he was told to by Krang, is to, you know, build Krang a body. So what did you think of the introduction? Because we get the introduction of Bebop and Rocksteady and all that, and Krang's on Krang. So what did you think of Bebop and Rocksteady and that whole idea of Shredder using the mutagen to create his soldiers to battle the turtles?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's the perfect way to go about it. You have, you know, sort of your yin and yang. You have the turtles who were created by the mutagen and their forces of good. And then you have Shredder, who is obviously a force of evil, using the mutagen to create his soldiers. So you have kind of the inverse of the turtles in Bebop and Rocksteady. So I think they, I definitely like the way that they went with it.
Yeah. And like I said, I really like that we do get a confrontation between Shredder and the Turtles, but you know, there's that ominous feeling that it's far from over, even though they think it is. I mean, we as an audience member, as adults, obviously, no, it's not. But imagine watching as kids, you know, having still the remainder of the animated series in front of us to know that it's not over. Is a pretty cool thing to want to come back and follow.
I'm glad that they differed from the comic books in that way. I think keeping Shredder around and making him the big bad through not only the first, you know, five episode first season of the series, but throughout the entirety of the series was the right decision and the right way to go.
I think it would have been a mistake had they, quote-unquote, killed him so early on in the cartoon. I mean, obviously, we know that in the comic, he eventually comes back, but
right
to do that in the cartoon would really, I think, have been a mistake. So I'm glad they didn't do that. So you're right. I do like the tack that they took here, and glad we got plenty more of him. And we'll get to more of those adventures, you know, in our next episode. Because it was a 5-part season, we're going to cover episodes 3, 4, and 5 in the next episode. But do you have anything to add about this episode, or do you want to go ahead and rate it?
I think we've covered it pretty well, man. We can get down to the ratings.
All right. So go ahead and let me know what your rating is for this one.
This one I got to go with a 10, man. We get the creation of Bebop and Rocksteady. We get the introduction to Krang and his motivation of wanting a body. We have, you know, Shredder and the Turtles, and we have the rescue of Splinter by the Turtles. And, you know, nobody fills out that yellow jumpsuit quite like April O'Neil.
This is true.
So, there's a little more action in this one than in the first episode, a little more humor. So for me, it is, you know, it's up there with the best of the Ninja Turtles episodes. I give it a 10.
Yeah, I think it really does build on the first episode and really, gives you just more. It expands on what you loved about the first episode. And then, like I said, more humor. You get a little more in depth with the characters, and you get all the action you want, and you get, like I said, you get a bit of that confrontation with Shredder and the Turtles, which is what you want and what would later define the series. So, I gotta agree with you, 10. I can't. There's no way or there's no area where I could take off points here, or justify taking away points. So, I'm going to agree with your perfect score on this, but I think that wraps up the episode. It's a It's it was a quick and concise one, and we had two great episodes to discuss, and like I said, this is one of those animated shows that there's a lot more episodes that I like of this series overall than the ones that I don't. So this is a great start, and it just seemed to, for the most part, continue.
Yeah, I got to agree. We're going to get to one of my favorite episodes in the next group with the neutrinos, but as far as a 1-2 punch coming out of the gate, this is a really good start, very strong beginning to a classic, well-loved animated series.
Yeah, it's very much, see, I think there was I think it seems like, maybe it's my bias, maybe you tell me if I'm wrong, but I think the shows that you and I probably grew up with as a kid, like, so when I say shows, I'm talking Batman the Animated Series, X-Men the Animated Series, Spider-Man the Animated Series, and this is one of them. They were consistently, for the most part, really good episodes. Yeah, you had a couple of rare stinkers, but I mean, I think 90 to 95% of most of the episodes were top-notch.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot more to like than dislike in a show like this. And that's why it was so well-loved and still is, 33 years later.
Yeah. So, and I'm not going to go into my rant on the newest iteration, because I think I did in episode 2. And yeah, that's not, I'm not going to.
Maybe we'll get to that down the road. I'm glad we're focusing on this to start.
Yeah, let's focus on the good. And there's lots of good to come. So stay with us. We hope you enjoyed this first foray down into memory lane, and this trip down the sewers, this very sanitary trip down the sewers, because taking an actual trip down a sewer is not something that I'm interested in doing. I mean, they could take me to the filming location and the actual sewer that they shot as the exterior of the Turtles' lair, and I still wouldn't go down there because that's kind of disgusting in real life. So, but this, thanks for coming on this journey down the metaphorical sewer with us, and we hope you will continue to join us as we delve into more retro Turtles reviews, and then we'll make our way through the different series. But you got to start somewhere, and where to start is the original. So we enjoyed this, and we're looking forward to going through the entire series. But that wraps it up for this particular episode. We will get back to the Mirage comics very soon, so don't worry about that, and the comics in general, and plenty of other stuff, the live action movies, all that stuff. But we are happy to have you along for this first journey into the animated world. Chris, if people want to continue talking Turtles with you until our next episode, where do they do that?
Well, you can always find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, Chris N. Harrelson, and that's spelled just like Woody Harrelson. So look me up. Let's have a chat.
Awesome. And if you want to interact with me on social media, it's at @Adam_NewsFan on Twitter, or you can go to our Multiverse Musings Podcast Network Facebook page. You can ask for acceptance into the group, and myself or one of my other co-hosts will add you, and we can continue talking Turtles as often as you want, and I'm up for that anytime. So please do that. We enjoy feedback. And next time we record, not for the next episode, but for the next episode we actually record, hopefully I'll remember. And if we get any questions, we can answer some questions as well. So I keep forgetting to do that. I got to be better taking questions. But I'll try to work on that as we go along. But this was fun, and I can't wait to do more. But remember, guys, keep yourself safe, and one piece of advice that I want to leave you with is to remember that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are forever, from the first pizza slice to the last. So long, everybody.
Hey, what do you guys want to eat?
Pizza!
Cowabunga, dude.
Go!